If someone dies and gives you $20 million and says, here's what you can go do with it, there may be a part where you remember something that was important to mom and dad, but it didn't necessarily get there the same way because you're getting it through the will or a trust and, you know, the video that you watch that has the person recording saying, here's where my assets are going to go. It's just so much more powerful when you can have that conversation and share that time with them and see that impact in their lives.
How you spend your money is, in many ways, how you spend your life. So how can you generate not just a return on your investments, but a return on your life? Welcome to the Own Your Wealth podcast. Whether you're a working professional, a small business owner, or thinking about retirement, listen in as host Sophie Howell of Cook Wealth discusses tax strategy, financial planning, and more to equip you to live life empowered and truly own your wealth.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us today for Own Your Wealth. I'm your host today, Sophie Howell, joined by our guest, Jason Deschays, COO and partner at Cook Wealth. We've switched seats today. How about that?
Look at that.
Keeping me on my toes as usual. Today, I'm excited. We're going to talk about money. We usually do that, but more specifically, why does it feel funny to talk about money, even with your family?
It's one of those things that was kind of the, we don't talk about politics, money, right, sex, and religion in common circumstances.
Sure.
So it's one of those like four non-speakables. And there's a lot of judgment around there. You can see it now kind of in the media where they talk about how much people make and choices people do with their spending, where there's a judgment call to it. So people will generally kind of clam up about it unless they're in safe circles and they may be able to talk with some people they feel trusted around.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, it's still pretty loose. Like you're talking about like numbers in directional sense, but you're not getting down to brass tacks with each other.
Yeah. From my experience, I would say you don't talk to family about money because you grew up in a family that didn't talk about money. So you learn from omission. You know, dad didn't come to me and talk about that, so I don't go to him and talk about it. And then you learn in your experience, in your career, and in society, it's not something people talk about. And it's pretty strange from our profession because people are coming in to talk about things. And is it often that you find with folks that you help in these emotional or at least financial conversations, it's a hard thing to express to you as a provider, but also it's a learned thing that they've censored themselves over time, even with the folks they're closest to. Mm-hmm. So when you say, what do you want to happen? What's your legacy? What is your adult son? How do they feel about that choice? And they haven't had that conversation yet.
Well, I can tell you that generationally, there's differences in how people have approached that. So if you talk to an older generation, probably a baby boomer, maybe some older Gen X people, is they've been told to do something. You save, you save, you save, and you just keep stocking money away. And that becomes more of this, I would say, not hoarding, but like, keep it tight.
Sure.
And you want to collect it. And so that becomes kind of the onus for everything is about how you make more to be able to have more. So again, the younger people, they're more willing to talk about things to a point. But unfortunately, with the rise of social media, they will get their information from the internet and influencers because it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. So they can have a question or they can Google something and then get data. Now, is that data accurate? Probably not. Is the data personalized? No. It's all subject to the thing that they typed in for the Google search. So I find that older folks probably tend to be more okay with talking about it with a professional because they've been kind of trained that there are those professionals there, and you've had a CPA, you've had an advisor, so they're more used to that. The younger people tend to be more DIY, and they'll try and kind of hobble together a strategy. And what is odd, though, is they don't necessarily know when the time to switch out of that mode is.
Okay.
Because things start to accumulate, especially after COVID, there was a large rise in both home values and with their 401ks and some of the investments they had. Suddenly, they made a lot. And especially the people who are then raising kids, they're just like money's going in and they're too busy thinking about life. And that money got big all of a sudden. And they're not sure what to do with it at that point and what's the right next step to take. Because after you fully fund your 401k, what do you do now? Do I do this? Do I save like this? I don't know. What am I Googling? Mm-hmm. So-and-so over there does this. It's a lot harder for them to find the next step without some professional help, sure. Which is, I think, where we come in and do a little more handholding and guidance with that.
That's bringing up so many great questions for me, one of which is that juxtaposition between you're working with a mother and father, maybe grandfather and grandmother at that point, and they've been incredible savers. They've stocked up so much. You have a great rapport with them. Here at Cook Wealth, we love working with next generations, not only because of that family dynamic that fits so closely with what we're here for, and that idea of inheritance and following through it, you know, selfishly, we get to see those milestones achieved mm-hmm. generation to generation. Also, it just makes sense to keep things moving in that direction. But that's so interesting because as their kids are maybe in their 30s or 40s and raising families, and they're living life differently. They've grown up in mm-hmm. a different world where spending and saving, there's still some baseline practices that will apply, those principles of maxing out a 401k or the tried and true principles of good financial planning. But they're gonna even receive advice differently. They're mm-hmm. in a different world, and they're saving, but they're also living differently along the way. And I bet that if the family dynamic hasn't been communicative, and then you get in a room as a professional with that, how does that look?
Well, let's look at families you may know in your life.
Yeah.
You've got where maybe dad worked or mom worked and the other spouse didn't, and that was more normative back in the
sure.
80s and earlier than that.
That's the way I grew up.
And that's how my mom had part-time jobs mm-hmm. or she had full-time jobs when we were a certain age. And then, you know, but her career was the one that changed when my dad got different jobs and made
right.
his move. But the thing is, the experience that you had as a kid, house prices were different.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of having a family was different,
right.
Different options. School was different. Private schools are on the rise now where people want a different choice, but that comes with a cost. And so the way you ran a family and how you ran your household financially was very different from previous generations, and they've iterated as things have happened
yeah.
over time. So even if you were a family that didn't, let's say you didn't talk about money at all with your parents
mm-hmm.
or your grandparents or anybody, grandpa may come in and they've been active savers and they are just set for life. The next generation may be pretty comfortable, but that third generation may still be considered well off, but they're dealing with way different issues. Buying a house for them is a much bigger issue and sum of money than it was with the people in the previous generations, mm-hmm. their parents, and definitely for their grandparents. The cost to go to education. So when they're looking down the bullet or down the gun of a private school education or college, much bigger cost than it was
right.
for their parents and for their grandparents. And so there just has to be a different communication style. So it's not just as easy as going, well, this is what your parents did. And what we did, or your grandparents say, well, this is what we did. You should just do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be more customized to that family situation. And I was having a conversation with a client just recently. Is like there's, there's always the good plan answer, which is do all these right things all the time. There's not enough money to do that for most people. They don't have an infinite bucket to just start filling. Oh, we'll save all the retirement funds. We'll do this all the way. We've got 18 years of cash and an investment pool that's so big. Will never be wanting for anything.
Right.
You don't have enough money for that kind of stuff. So you got to do the best you can, which is like have good practices, build those practices, and then allow them to grow as time happens and income grows. But then sometimes you just have to live life. You got to pay groceries. You got to replace a car maybe sooner than you expect because of a car accident or the thing just breaks. And you can't drive a 300,000-mile minivan until it falls to the ground because eventually you got to get your family around.
Right.
So I think it's important to start those good core habits and allow those to work up.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, my mother-in-law taught my wife and her sister, you know, they use the envelope system. So when they got their allowance,
yes.
and inflation over 40 years is a little different,
mm-hmm.
but you know, they got maybe a dollar for spending and a quarter for giving, a quarter for savings. And so that's kind of how it works. So they had different envelopes for those things. We have changed the practice with our three kids. It's a, they get a family economy, and part of that goes into jelly jars. So we stick it in there. And then they have now, since the older children have elevated into more of a debit card system, so we'll put their spending money in there. We have a savings account. We transfer that from our account. And then they have their giving money that they can get, go to church, and they can put it in the plate. But the idea is we want to start that when they're getting $8. So when they're getting $800 a paycheck or $8,000 a paycheck, the same model still holds, just it's flexing up with the income increasing. So I'm not going to tell them, hey, you got to go save in your 401k yet. We'll do the developmentally appropriate stuff now. But that's where you start those conversations. And then you start changing those conversations. And so we've, you know, another thing that people don't want to talk about with kids, like, well, how much money do we have? Is mom and dad rich? Or mom and dad in up their eyeballs in debt? No one wants to talk about that, which is usually the part where they just stop. And if you think about other conversations, that no one wants to have the talk with about sex and relationships, because and it's awkward and you don't know what to say, because you think about when you had that conversation, it was like, well, there's birds and bees. That's it. Good talk. And then they're out. So you're, I wasn't given that talk. So how am I going to give this talk to anybody else? Same thing with money. If you weren't equipped, it's hard to equip someone else. So I think there's a degree of, you have to start the baby steps. Start with stewardship concepts. Start with just understanding what $8 means, or $10, and then start working into what does everything else mean. And so, you know, my kids are hardcore Lego fanatics, and dad is too. But they, like, for them, Legos are kind of like contextually dollars. The small sets cost one thing. The big sets cost a lot more. So they understand the big one costs a lot more. The little ones cost less. But if I were to tell them, you know, mom and dad have $5,000 in the bank account, they're like, well, you can go buy me a Lego. The big one. You can. You have that money.
Right.
You can't just tell them that, because for them, $5,000, they don't understand bills. They don't understand mortgages. They don't understand savings. For them, it's cash in, spend. So you just have to start with that little bit. And then you get into, this is contextually what this means. This is what we've set you up with. That usually can happen sometime in the maybe mid-teens, late teens,
right,
and into college, where you can have more of a big conversation about it and they understand numbers. And it's also, if you're concerned, which at least this is my opinion, the concern is often either if they knew the whole story, they'd be shameful of it, like, oh yeah, we're living paycheck to paycheck, even though we make $1 million a year because we have a huge lifestyle, or if someone would think that they would be spoiled because they understand they have a lot of money and the kids don't have concept for it. And that is another form of shame, because they don't want people to be spreading their situation around. There's a way to describe that in a private fashion, where you say, well, this is our family's private information. This is, well, we don't share this with people, but we are generous with others. We're generous at church. Like, you can use terminology like that that kind of senses that there's something different. And kids will understand. There'll be kids who go on really nice vacations. There's kids who have really nice houses. They see that, really nice cars. And you can coach them, and that's not, everyone has the same resources.
Right.
But you don't have to be like, oh, here's mom and dad's personal balance sheet that you understand completely. That can come in time, and it should come in time. What you don't want to do is die, and then your kids find out you had $20 million, and they're just blown, and they're like, what am I supposed to do with this? You did not coach them at all. You did not prepare them for that. That is actually going to be harder on them than if you would just say, hey, here's the situation, this is how much we have, and you kind of do a little bit of time, and then you get the whole picture. And if you do that, I think it gets them, the second generation, set up better for money. And it doesn't mean you have to have the conversation of the personal balance sheet on day one.
Absolutely. I love that idea of contextualizing with kids. I recently got a question from my son about the difference between renting and owning. And I thought, you know what? It's time for us to play Monopoly. And we've had we've had a great time with that. And also, when my daughter wins, she insists on being the banker. She's the youngest, and she's the spender in our family. My son is the saver. I never taught her this. When she wins, she throws all the dollar bills up in the air. I'm rich. I'm rich. It's so cute. And it's just, it obviously reminds me of our work and what we're doing in financial services. Certainly what I need to do better as a parent, maybe.
Well, but you as a parent, it's, it, there, everyone's got their own way of the kids will process money differently too.
Yeah.
So just because you're a saver does not mean your kids are savers.
Great point.
And there's simply one may be a saver, one may be a spender. And I don't know how many families I've worked with where the kids have very different financial risk taking. Or
growing up in the same household, same still interpret
same
it
teaching lessons, and like
their
you go,
brains are wired.
Like I know you two were raised by the same parents. I know you're both those same kids, but how did you get such different messages? And it's just because God created us as very individualized human beings, and we're all going to process things the way we are. So you also have to have a little grace for yourself in that conversation. That you can teach what you can. The student will learn whatever they're going to learn, and it may not be the exact thing you're teaching. And,
totally.
But that's okay. You still want to have the conversation, try and create that coaxing of information and the right way of stewarding things from early age.
Well, I couldn't resist when she threw the money up in the air. I thought in my head, where'd you learn this? But I bit my tongue and I said, what's rich? What does rich mean? And she said, it means I can buy toys. And so it's just like the Lego thing, the big and small. I think that's so cool. Your parenting conversation reminds me, too, of the advisor and client relationship and is very in alignment with what you were discussing with the eventual wealth transfer. You know, you hear not your dad's advisor, not your grandpa's advisor. How do you think Cook Wealth is approaching that? What are some stories you can tell us about those kinds of conversations and how you've seen this play out where you do have a generational difference, maybe a lack of communication or maybe great communication, but the same advice team can come in and contextualize like a parent would. I have a father here who's done life this way, a son who's coming up, you know, and is doing life this way and differently because of their brains and their life experience and their career. The same rules apply, yet there's a difference in the advice that you give based on their values, you know, what they want to do with their life. One of my favorite stories and the way I see our value translate into families is giving them space to think about if I live another day or another 10 years or another 20 years, do I want to be here to give my son and my grandson that envelope and watch them go, Dad's gone. This is a lot of money. I guess I'll call Jason. You know, I guess I'll go to Cook Wealth, or if they, you know, maybe they have no idea, or, you know, that may not be the way they react. But the other option there that some folks don't think about is what if we spend that money now together on a beach house that we can go to every month and spend more time together, or on an extravagant trip that my kids would never go on because they're saving, but I can go with them now.
I've seen this kind of logic with in charitable giving too, the phrase, I believe it's Ron Blue came up with, is do your giving while you're living so you know where it's going.
Do your giving while you're living.
So that's like where people go, well, I'll give to charity when I die, or I'll give to my kids when I die, but I will have this. And what happens is then you don't know what's going to go on with it. And I think that there's definitely an opportunity to do those teaching moments where, in that sense where you're describing, where the family is doing things together. And so maybe it's you're passing down like an annual gift to the kids to help improve their situation, whether it's going to say, hey, I'm going to help you pay for daycare. So you have to stress about that, because it would be really important for this family if they weren't having the same pressure to work a certain kind of job and do extra if we can just do a little bit of helping.
What a beautiful legacy, because they grew up without the choice. Dad had to work and mom had to stay home and we had to clip coupons and that's how life was.
And I've seen a lot of families where like they will cover the cost for things that are important to them. So if they felt like it was important for one of the parents to stay home, they would help with that in some fashion, where it's like, we'll pay for blah, we will help, you know, do an annual gift to supplement your income, or whatever the case may be, we'll do that. Or if I have another family where they've told both their daughters that we will cover the cost of Christian education, whether it's here or there or wherever, but we'll do that because that's important to us and we want you to be able to benefit from that because they went there. So we want you to have that same opportunity, but we don't want you to have to stress about the cost because we have the resources to help you. And that's a way of getting that legacy passed down currently. I think that it's allowing those resources to happen more currently and allow you to be there to talk to them about why it's important to you. If someone dies and gives you $20 million and says, here's what you can go do with it, there may be a part where you remember something was important to mom and dad, but it didn't necessarily get there the same way because you're getting it through the will or a trust and, you know, the video that you watch that has the person recordings and here's where my assets are going to go. It's just so much more powerful when you can have that conversation and share that time with them and see that impact in their lives and seeing how they can grow as a family, grow as a collective, whether it's the beach house or the family trip. I think those are really cool to hear about stories. We've got clients who do that where they do it's the this trust it funds the family trip and they have a great time playing it together and it's a big occasion for them. And that's really cool. It's that having the conversation now, having the experience now and not just saying, well, here you go, you'll get when you get.
I'm curious how you make that recommendation and bring that into the financial planning process for folks who've grown up not talking about money. Let's say you have a young professional who's doing well in their own right. They come in, they're a client with you for years. You help them navigate a situation and they mention, you know, my dad's health's not great. I'm not really sure what's coming up there. I know I'm executor.
So one of the things that we like to do is we like to collaborate with the various kind of players in that, right?
Okay.
So if you've got family and they have an estate, you know, part of our process is look at the estate documents.
Okay.
So if we know certain family members are listed in those,
right,
we'll have the conversation with the client saying, are they aware of this? Are they aware of the responsibilities they have as part of your document? And that if they don't, then it's like, okay, we should probably get the attorney involved and have it sit down so everyone knows what they're expected to do here, what your legacy is. And then we talk through like, okay, is your plan to have all this? What's your end goal? And they go, oh, I don't know. I've got $10 million. I'm good. Anything above that's gravy. Okay, well, what's your impact? You want to possibly give some of the excess down now and then allow them to kind of see how that impacts your kids' lives. And then, you know, probably build back up past 10 again. And you just kind of keep layering on there. And you're encouraging the conversation, asking questions. You're not telling them, you should go do this because that's what you should do. It's more, you want to invite a conversation about what their intent is. And it is not my money.
Yeah.
I have no skin in this game. So if they want to keep it tight, I can tell them maybe not the best idea, but hey, that's your call.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm happy to help facilitate that conversation. I've done that a number of times where we've gone into a room and we said, this is what the estate looks like. Now, mom's not anywhere close to dying, but there were some changes. There was someone who passed away, an inheritance that happened. Like, this is how everything plays out. This is the way the trust works. And we have the attorney there to kind of walk through that part. We talked about the kind of mix of assets they had and the things they have to think about. And it was really a very easy conversation. No, the parents didn't have to say anything. The kids didn't have to say anything. Everyone just had to listen. And then they could ask questions. And then they kind of knew what they're dealing with. They knew it was a long time away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, cool, now we're aware. And I'm not surprised if I get a letter or a call saying, hey, now you got to go do this, when they're like, I don't even know how I'd be an executor. That's not my thing.
I love that Cook Wealth provides that. I feel like that's so unique and such a such an add-on. All I keep thinking as with from the client's perspective is, I hadn't thought of that. I'm curious, you know, that's the kind of headspace we want to give to folks to think about those things. Like, we'll handle the taxes, we'll handle the numbers. You know, you think about what that feels like and what that looks like. And are you having healthy communication with the folks that really need to know? I would love that opportunity, even personally. I happen to be the executor of my parents' estate. I have no idea what that's really going to mean. And I'll tell you why. It's because my mom doesn't want to talk to me about not being around.
Yeah.
She gets weepy. And I certainly don't want, who wants to make their mom cry, you know? And it's not even for me. I think some folks would think, well, that's in poor taste. I don't want my parents to think I'm waiting for them to keel over so yeah. I can have their money. I feel like they know that's not true, but I like to prepare. I like to, you know, Dad, what are you expecting from me on this?
And they know
that's
you.
Where I'm coming from. But for and my dad might be okay with that. But for my mom, it's like, I don't want to talk about not being around, Sophie. You know, yeah. This is sad.
Well, but see, they know you as you're their child, mm-hmm. and you know them as your parents. So right. you understand that. So every conversation like that becomes different. My mom is a very direct person.
Okay.
And I can be very direct too. So I knew I was the executor at one point when we lived in New Mexico, and
right.
I said, where is it? Tell me what I need to know and show me where everything is. And she's
I'm
like, oh, here
there.
You go. It's in this drawer right here. And
I'm
pull
almost
out this key.
There. Yeah.
And then, so I knew with my mom, I'd have to be direct and just say, what is the situation?
Yeah.
And she would then tell me what I need to know. And then I can figure out the rest.
Right.
If you got, you have to kind of work it a bit and say, this is what I'm worried about. Put it on you. I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to live up to your wishes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm going to honor your legacy if I don't know what you want. And I also don't know where to go. Is there a document I need to be aware of? Do you have me listed anywhere? Those are the kind of things that you can soft play it a little bit,
right.
and knowing who you're communicating with, or you can be more direct. If you kind of know, because
sure.
you know someone was like, "Well, you're gonna have to take care of this." Well, then you better tell me what I got to take care
mm-hmm.
of. And it's fine if you just know who you're talking to and deliver the message the way you need to.
Is the answer for Cook Wealth clients in that situation call Cook Wealth?
They know the situation. They know this. I one of the things I do encourage families, because we have a lot of families where we have multiple generations, like three generations of a family. And what we encourage them to do is, like, you kind of have your key person who maybe deals with the matriarch of the family. And that's kind of maybe more generationally aligned, or at mm-hmm. least more of a senior person. But then there's like the second and third generations that maybe work with different members of the same team. So
okay.
we have our team philosophy here. So we have our senior advisor, associate advisor, our planner. It may be that you, at different parts in your life, you're working with more directly
sure.
with those people who are more aligned with you in life. And so it's like, I'm going to work together with this person for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be working with Dad's advisor. Because there's a part, too, it's like, you don't want, there, maybe it's reality, maybe it's not. People feeling like, oh, I'm just going to get the old guy that's sitting there with a out of touch with things and not going to understand me, and they haven't given me the time of day before. And so they want their own independent relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It does not mean it has to be somewhere else. It just means they have their own relationship with their own person. And I think that's very important
yeah.
that they build that kind of community, because with their own advisor, because that's the person they're going to work with when they're in their 30s and 40s
right.
and 50s. They aren't going to be working with the 50-year-old when they're 50, because that person's going to be retired. And so they have to have that separate relationship. And it also allows them to kind of express what their opinion is. It's not clouded by the parents' view of things.
Sure.
And also, it could be a situation where they want some privacy. So it almost could be like, okay, it's separate, and we don't talk about it. And I've seen that with a lot of families, where even though the whole family's there, they talk to different people,
mm-hmm.
and they have their little separation, just so they have a sense of, like, their world, and it's not intercommingled with everything
yeah.
else. Now, there's other families where it is all intercommingled, and they're fine with that. But other ones, they want a little more separate. Just enough separation to keep private, but not enough to not want to work with the same team.
Well, I think you're hitting on the exact point that brought us to this, why is it so funny to talk about money? Because it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's mine. It's how we say around here, how I spend my money is how I spend my life. And I think that's true in a lot of ways. It has to do with your identity, your values, your impact, your day-to-day living. Depending on your family dynamic, that could be very private and independent, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you. And it could be very communal and healthy and, you know, somewhere in between. And so it's great to have options with your advice team to make that collaborative and make that safer. How do you toe the line or you know, walk on that tightrope of, we need to talk about this, it's important to your family and your estate planning, your legacy, and this is private and confidential, and you
mm-hmm.
can trust me not to tell your dad?
It is a lot of communication. So it's understanding everyone's kind of, you can't make assumptions.
Right.
So I can tell you that it's you have to look at from I'm having a relationship with you, mm-hmm. and I'm having my relationship with you, which means you tell me, knowing that your dad's also a client, what do you want them to know? And if they go, oh, no, I really want to keep him out of it, great. That's, we're going to make sure we note that. We will not discuss anything. There's other times where like, no, dad helps me out. If he wants to look at things, it's great. Or so-and-so wants to look at things. Maybe their kid looks at it because mm-hmm. they're getting older. And they go, you know what? She's going to be taking care of this anyway. So, yeah, she can have full access to this and feel free. You got to talk and get that from the person you're dealing with. And that each person's going to have a different opinion on that.
Right.
So if someone says they're welcome to see it and someone says they can, I'm happy to see theirs, but I don't want them to see mine. You got to honor that. And that's going to be different by the family, and that's okay. It's one of those things that if you don't ask, you can't find out. So they think it's just may as well ask. But definitely don't assume. You know what they say if you assume. So
I know I'm biased as a proud employee of Cook Wealth, but I think we it sounds like we need to be charging for family therapy here.
You know, I always thought about having like a fainting couch in my office and like getting a counseling degree because there's times I had a lot of tears and happy smile, but like, let's talk through this issue.
What it feels like the next natural question is what does a Cook Wealth advisor not do?
or kind law. Of
no law. Disclaimer, insert disclaimer here. Jason, thanks for joining us today and graciously allowing me to ask you these great questions. I know that our audience is going to get a lot of benefit out of what we've shared today.
Well, thanks, Sophie. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have questions, please reach out to us at 919-784-9100 or cookwealth.com/podcast. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Own Your Wealth podcast. Click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Visit our website at cookwealth.com or give us a call at 919-784-9100. Cook Wealth LLC is a registered investment advisor with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Cook Wealth LLC. This content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.